Today's podcast brought to you by Elders and Reinagard by Zoetis. Hello, I'm Kerry Lunigan. Welcome to the Weekly Grill. And what better way to welcome spring than with a check on the markets? And who better to join us than our regular contributors from episode 3, that's EP 3, Market Intelligence, Matthew Dalgleish. Matty, welcome.
G'day, Kerry.
And the General Manager of the RMA Network supporting independent stock and station agents across Australia, Chris Howie. Chris, hello and welcome.
How are you, Kerry?
Chris, I want to start with you because you used a phrase recently which stuck in my memory, and those words are lack of confidence. My question is this, on this phrase, it's a copy of a phrase from a red-headed philosopher from southern Queensland. Please explain, Chris, please explain.
Over the last 3 weeks, I've been talking to a lot of agencies and a lot of clients right down the eastern seaboard and Western Australia. Sorry about the Tassie. All of them have got no confidence in where the market is. They've got no visibility. And so many agents and clients have said, you know what, we're not even going to worry about livestock general this year. We're going to just focus on our cropping. And especially up in the New South Wales, a lot have said we're not prepared to feed in regards to supplementary feeding because it's getting a bit dry. They just said we're going to sell and sit back. And a lot of it's being perpetuated by the media continually banging on about the El Nino coming. Like, weather's weather. It's always came. We can't change it. But it seems as though it's got into the heads of so many of the producers around Australia, and they're missing opportunities to create a margin.
Matt, are you hearing similar? I mean, you were again in the West recently. How's the confidence over there?
Confidence is terrible, but I'd concur with what Chris is saying. It's an absolute lack of confidence, and it feels to me, even when you look at the actual price levels and price action and discounts to, say, global pricing benchmarks, we're sitting now at levels that are pretty much drought-type levels, yet we're not really in drought, you know. So it's almost as though producers are just pre-preparing for, you know, what they think is an inevitable, which is this El Nino coming and a move to much drier conditions.
That upcoming ban on the live trade out of the West, I know it's knocked the stuffing out of many, but has it crossed into other areas? I mean, into the farming area maybe?
Certainly in the West, they're taking a huge hit with that. You know, there is some optimism there that they can change policy. I think it might be a bit of an uphill battle, but we've seen increases to slaughter levels this year, particularly for mutton, if you look at the volumes, and it's really exposed that in some areas we haven't got the capacity in terms of labour to process too many at one time. And I think that's really evident in the West, and that's why the price in the West without, you know, we're in the prohibition phase, so they're not exporting currently sheep because of the Northern Hemisphere summer. And that has really exposed, you know, that problem that when we need to turn off, we need to have that domestic capacity firing, and it's certainly not going strong enough in the West despite the processes there doing their best to try and keep going. But you can only do so much when you've got only so many people and only so many housing areas to be able to, you know, to have these people live. So there's a whole lot of infrastructure that needs to be done before we phase out this live trade. Otherwise, we're going to see these price reactions all the time.
I reckon the memory of the recent drought is also very, very close, and it doesn't take much to prick that memory and say, gee, we've got to be careful.
I agree there, Kerry. It's what Matt said is 100% right, and we seem as though we've driven the producers to a silo mentality. They're not looking at a diverse range of what they do anymore. It's, oh, we're going to be croppers. If we go back in time, and a stock agent talked about everything, and we gradually put them into silos. It started with the big companies, you know, your livestock, your wool, and it removed that expanse of thought about where you can make a quid. And I just think we're pushing with all these regulations, bits and pieces coming in, we're pushing producers further and further into one little box. And I agree with Matt, it's creating an issue for us, and everything else adds on to the back of that.
I want to get to some positive news eventually, boys, but we have to deal with another potential price bomb, the LSD fracas with Indonesia. All those cattle getting fatter and fatter, not going on boats to Indonesia, they inevitably will head south. They'll be on a taxi south, just what the market does not need at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as a country here, we've done as much as we can to demonstrate that we don't have LSD in the country, and indeed we don't. And the good, the one positive sign, I guess, was that Malaysia just recently reversed their ban. Unfortunately, Malaysia is only 1% of the trade for that live cattle, so they're a small amount, but at least it's a signal to Indonesia that, you know, Malaysia's comfortable that we're okay. And I think we've got Prime Minister Albanese over there presently. Hopefully, he can get into the ear of the Indonesian authorities there and get them to see the light too and get this ban lifted, because we need that movement happening now while we can muster and get these cattle out.
Well, Chris, I guess the one good thing is if all these getting fatter cattle are on a taxi south, at least the producers get something for them, don't they? They end up in the grinding meat market, but that's something.
That's what Matt said before. We're not in a drought, and thank God we're not. We've got feed. We've got still availability to move. You know, we don't have to sell tomorrow, but, you know, we do need to sell. And if you have a look, and Matt will talk about that later, the demand for that manufacturing-style beef, it's looking pretty tidy. So at least we've got destination. At present, we're being killed by supply. Price has got this big supply blanket on it, but it's not a drought supply, which is a real positive.
Have we underestimated the importance of the northern cattle industry in providing a floor for the southern price, do you think?
No, I don't think. It's been around for such a period of time, although when it was in full swing, the cattle industry going north, it was a growth enterprise. It was, look where all our cattle are going. And we probably lost sight of what happens when they do come back in. So in 2011, you know, when I was working for Elders, that change happened so quickly that a lot of the agencies weren't geared to reverse the flow. They weren't geared to change back into the south. They had lost their relationships. I think we've learned from that. And, you know, speaking to agents at Catherine only this week, they were very quick to identify we need to make sure that we keep a relationship in the South Open.
I'll just tick off some current prices. Feeder steers, 268 cents down, thank you, 247 cents from this time last year. Cow prices, 204 cents down, 168 cents from this time last year. And the good old Lecky, which can mean something or mean nothing to various people, 460 cents down, thank you, have a listen to this, down 574 cents since this time last year. Is this all about weather, or is it all about demand, or is it on the turn? Have we seen the bottom? What's the story here?
I think, we've just been saying, it goes back to that lack of confidence and this kind of mentality of drought when we haven't got drought. And that's what I was saying before, that if you look at some of these key, you know, normal discounts we see to some of these categories to their equivalent offshore values, we are right now running at what same kind of discount levels, particularly heavy steer, say, if you compare that to where the US is now for the equivalent heavy steer, we're at levels in terms of discount to that animal than what we saw back in 2014-15 in the middle of the drought. And it just makes no sense when you look out your window.
Yeah.
I'd suggest the Ecky, no better evidence that the Ecky is a confidence indicator. We talk about it, you know, when it was flying, everyone wanted to say, look, let's attach all of these different marketing campaigns to the Ecky. You know, I was very reserved and made my point known. But have a look at it. It's a direct reflection. Matt can make a chart on it. It's entirely confidence in the industry drives the Ecky, because that's where your background is and your feedlotters report from. That's their activity is creating that indicator.
Yes, you could see producers at sale yards 18 months ago, 2 years ago, they had to suck lemons to get the smiles off their faces, but it's a different story now, isn't it?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Time for a break. We're checking the markets on Beef Central's On The Grill. Back in a moment. Breathe easy with Rhinogard, the only single-dose intranasal vaccine for control of IBR in your cattle. Get in control of bovine respiratory disease, that's BRD, before it begins. Just deliver a single intranasal spray of Rhinogard for rapid IBR control and add a single dose of BoviShield MH1 for protection against pneumonia. For rapid protection against MHN IBR in your weaners and pre-feedlot cattle, breathe easy with BoviShield and Rhinogard, available from your local vet today.
For over 180 years, Elders has proudly been supporting Australian livestock producers. Elders supports your business across the production cycle with more than 350 livestock agents, access to specialist livestock advice and auction services. Draw on our established relationships to buy and sell commercial and stud livestock across domestic and international markets. Enjoy Del Credere guaranteed payments when you sell with Elders. Livestock funding also available, subject to approval. Elders, for Australian agriculture.
Welcome back. We're checking the markets on Beef Central's On The Grill, and with our experts are Matty Douglas from EP3 and from RMA Network, supporting independent agents. That's Chris Howie. Now, our ovine friends, trade lambs, 424 cents down 352 cents since last year. And mutton, one of your favourites, Chris, mutton, 145 cents, thank you, down $3.83 since this time last year. What is happening to the ovine market?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I'm going to get onto exports. Now, exports are going gangbusters, but the price is in the toilet.
Kerry, just because we saw the ABS figures come out for the half year now for slaughter only a week or so ago,
yeah.
and they're a bit more kind of reliable is probably not the right word. I don't want to bag the MLA figures, but they're more broad in terms of they take on more data points, so they're a much more accurate figure. If you look at slaughter from this time to the same time last year, lamb slaughter is up about 12%, but mutton is up about nearly 70%. So there's been a significant turn off of those older ewes that were being held on for breeding purposes when we were rebuilding the flock. And I think a lot of people have just got themselves prepared, like we said, for this potential drought. And we've just seen a huge amount of turn off, and it's at the time when we haven't been able to work through them efficiently enough in the processing side. So that the price is the only other lever that can be pulled, and unfortunately that's where the pressures come from, I think.
So it's supply-driven rather than price-driven?
Definitely, Kerry. The supply, the older ewes coming in, we're at the time of year when your processors have already set their contracts. They've got their demand for their lamb to go into export markets, and you can't just switch a chain from lamb, which you've got to supply to your contract, to an opportunistic mutton trade. And because there's so much mutton on the market at present, because of exactly what Matt said, it's just put this supply umbrella. And speaking to a processor at a sale on Monday, I actually give them credit because he could have taken the market further down, but he held his rate. He made the sale right, and I've seen a couple of forward contracts pop out that it's about finding supply, but they're getting inundated. The second a contract opens, it's pretty much closed because of the numbers. So the processors are trying, but at the end of the day, they've still got to fill the contracts that they set before they knew the price was going to where it was going.
Exports to China, Japan, South Korea of beef up 28% on last year, and overall beef exports in the 8th month to August at a 3.5-year high. You have to call it gangbusters, don't you? It's just extraordinary. And the overall, the big picture, we look at American production, it's tipped to decline for the next several years. So could we have an export-led recovery?
It's quite possible. I mean, the only one in the beef side in terms of the top four that hasn't really been firing adequately enough has been Japan. But I think there have been those talks of a lot of particularly beef in freezer space or just red meat in freezer space in Asia. I think Japan's probably suffering under that, and that's part of the reason why their demand is continuing to stay quite low. But the real turnaround this year has been the US. I mean, they've gone, if you look back to last season, the average monthly flows are running about 45% below the average trend, the five-year trend. But this year, just in August, actually, they've gone to 42 or 3% above. So it's been an absolute turnaround there, and the demand from the US for Australian beef, and I think pricing, now that we're much more competitive, of course, that's helping too. But, that US scenario, they've moved from being the fourth top destination last year for beef from Australia to number one. Just now in August, they moved to number one spot. So they've just displaced Japan from the number one spot. So big turnaround from the US. South Korea's still chugging along reasonably firmly. I think they're about 16% above average in terms of demand, and China's about 6% above average in terms of their kind of demand when you compare the monthly flows to the 5-year trend. So, 3 out of 4 are not going so bad. So that's a pretty good result, really.
Yeah, total exports at the end of August, 138,000 tonnes plus, up 62% on last year. So these big sales to Asia, does it mean those refrigerated stockpiles throughout Asia, they've emptied out?
Like I said before, there's rumours that certainly Japan and Japan's fallen numbers show that they are getting full, and that's part of that reason for the kind of weaker demand out of Japan. There are rumours, anecdotes that South Korea is also getting full, but the data there is not as clear, so it's a bit hard to really verify that claim. But certainly, if you look at just the volumes they're taking, I'd say that they're not quite full just yet because they're still taking above average flows. And China as well. I think China, not just from Australian beef exports, but just all beef exports going into China last month, I think it was the strongest month they've ever had on record. So, and they're taking a heap of sheep meat too at the moment, particularly mutton. So I would argue that the Chinese freezers are not full at all yet based on the way their demand's running.
What do they do with the mutton in China? I've often wondered how they cook it or what they use it for.
Yeah, there's a hot pot dish, I think they call it, that's like a slow cooking type methodology, and it's quite communal as well. That's one of the kind of primary ones, and it's quite a popular, going out to the restaurant type activity where you go out and have a communal hot pot. I think that's one that's really driving this mutton demand from China, that kind of cuisine.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. If you go into Indonesia, you've got your bangkai balls. It's the base level red meat, for want of a better word, and a lot of your old traditional dishes are based around it. And we all think in the lines of roast, chops. Over there, it's just the piece of meat, and it's unusual. You actually see the saddle where the loin chop comes from. That's cut in a full circle. So you've got the entire rib as well as the flaps that are attached to it.
Yeah.
And at these prices, every community will jump back into eating meat. It's always been the price point that's excluded people.
Interesting lift in boxed beef sales to Indonesia.
Boxed beef to Indonesia is also, that's been increasing in the last few years. Indonesia is our fifth biggest market, actually, for boxed beef. So, we always know that they're number one for live cattle. But they've been an up-and-coming kind of destination for beef exports for a number of years, and that's just sitting in fifth spot. That's nothing to sneeze at either. And the growth potential there in the box trade, as they get wealthier and the population grows, and we've got the free trade agreement sorted out just last year, that's another really good opportunity for Australian producers.
Yeah, of interest is a couple of other items. Our first shipment of barley to China without the tariff loading. Did anyone hear a price for that particular load of barley?
I haven't. It's a shame my colleague Andrew Whitelaw's not on this one because he's all over that kind of stuff. But I have heard that there's more in the pipeline as well, actually. So there's already kind of more shipments arranged to be going there. I know, we've said it a few times on episode 3 that pretty much as soon as that market opens again, it won't be long before China's the number one destination because they're just prepared to pay that higher pricing. And it's a very, very, in terms of geographical distance, we're ideally placed. They like our barley. It's top quality going into their brewing sectors mainly. We won't be surprised at all to see China. It's only going to take a matter of months, I think, and they'll be back in number one spot because it's such a good fit for us and them.
Now, Chris, sheep and lambskins, what are they worth these days, if anything?
Oh, it's pretty straightforward. A composite skin is nothing, and there may be a disposal fee on it depending on where they're
watered. You mean that it's not worth less than nothing? They have to pay for disposal?
Yeah, and it goes down. A lot of the processors tried to put it into their recoverables, into the big boilers, and all it did was block the boilers up. They tried to shed them and
very clever, yes.
Shred them.
Yeah.
Bearshawn merino skins are in the same boat. However, once you get to 6 weeks on a merino, and I strongly advise it, once you get to a 6-week pelt on a merino skin, they start going back into positive value. So that's a tick. Surprisingly, Dorper and I think Aussie White skin have also got a value because of the style of leather it is. So that's a positive.
What are they worth, $20 or something? Are they worth $10 or $15, $20?
No, not quite. No, I think the longer length merino, like Chris was just saying there, I think they're about $5 or $6. They were about $20 last year, $21, yeah. but I think they're down just below, into the single figures now, I think.
I was just about to mention cattle hides. They used to be a nice little add-on for producers, but not anymore, I assume. Is that the way it's headed?
Oh, cattle hides have been gone for a long time.
I think that's that leather side too. I mean, Chris mentioned some of the leather from the sheep there that's kind of still getting some value, but the bigger kind of beef leather market, I guess if you want to call it that, is one that's very susceptible to global downturn. And I think coming through COVID and then through the other side with some economies still looking quite shaky, that's one of those global markets that suffers a lot because it's such a discretionary spend. So we really need to see, the likes of China and the US going into an economic boom rather than facing recessionary fears before we see that leather market pick up in a big way.
Is there any recovery possible, or are we headed to the artificial materials for forevermore? I suspect it's the latter somehow, that it's just too expensive to process these hides.
I think it's part of a broader cycle, and particularly for those commodities that are susceptible to the global macro trend, the economic trend. We're in an inflationary phase. A lot of countries are raising interest rates. There are concerns around recession and people are worried about maybe job security or how much their mortgage is costing them. And that's all contributing, I think, to this lack of confidence as well. So, while we've got that scenario, I think you're not going to see, any significant growth in markets like wool or like leather. Those real discretionary type spends are going to be the ones that need the economy to be firing and people to be feeling very confident about their economic prospects before. Yeah.
So what do we do? What do we do with 6 million cattle hides every year? What do we do with them? Do we landfill or what happens to them? Can anyone answer that?
I know there's still a demand out there, Kerry. It's a price level. So you have a look at the motor vehicle industry.
They're all into those microfibers now, aren't they? And artificial leather and artificial this.
That's it. So furniture, fashion. I don't know. Matt probably got a pair of leather pants somewhere, but
a pair of leather chaps there.
You said it, Matt.
But Terry, we had this conversation quite a few years ago about wool. We said, "What's happened to the wool market in regards to demand?" And if you think about it, we actually sat down and mapped it. Russia used to be a massive buyer of wool. That higher micron wool. And what we worked out is that when they were buying the wool, firstly, it was going into their military uniforms. Secondly, it was going into big, heavy winter coats. Well, now they've got an air-conditioned house. They walk into an air-conditioned garage. They hop into an air-conditioned car to go to an air-conditioned office. No one's putting this big, heavy material on anymore. So I think it's just a change in the way the world runs.
Yeah.
On that fake leather, though, Kerry, I was in one of those auto stores, and they had a section with the steering wheel covers, and they were advertising the steering wheel cover as vegan leather. I went and had a closer look because I was quite hopeful that it was made from real vegan material, but it was actually just a vinyl. It was a vinyl product, unfortunately.
Listen, just briefly in the time we have left, forecasts heading into through Spingen to Melbourne, Matt, prices?
I think obviously we're not far away from the spring flush, and particularly in Victoria, we're seeing some higher numbers of lambs coming through from New South Wales already, but they tend to be a bit more stable, those numbers. It's the Victorian volumes that are the real drivers for that spring flush, and we're probably, usually we see them start to come through in a big way late October through November, so that's a bit of a concern that there might be still a little bit of price pressure to come in the lamb space. I think a lot of the price correction's already been there, so it may not be as stronger decline in pricing through spring is what we usually see. But I think there might be, maybe 5 to 10%, drop from these current prices. But, like you said before, Kerry, they're quite low already. In terms of the cattle side, I still think looking at what's going on in the export space, it's quite strong. And looking, at where we're sitting compared to those global benchmarks, I think we're still quite undervalued. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see, we've not far off the bottom. I think we're going to see prices start to creep higher or grind higher. It's probably not going to be a huge recovery for cattle pricing, but I wouldn't be surprised if we're maybe 5 to 10% higher by the end of spring.
Matt, my local butcher tells me lamb is a hot ticket at the moment. It's selling very, very well.
Kerry, the lamb price in Wodonga a couple of weeks back, Arnold's put out loin chops at $9.99 a kilo. They sold 300 packs in 3 hours. Jeez. Could not keep up with demand.
Yeah.
I've noticed that there's economy beef coming out in one of the local South Australian supermarkets, rumps at $8.50 a kilo. Like, we're just starting to see those price points appear now. And I'm with Matt. The lamb and mutton job, we're now into the spring. We've just got to ride the market. We get into the back end of November and numbers start to even up. We're in new season lamb. It's just the normal process now. And hopefully we can wash out, you know, the oversupply piece that we had leading into it. With cattle, that northern piece in regards to manufacturing, yeah, that's definitely going to put extra numbers in. But we are seeing the quality articles just hovering and heavy, you know, heavy steers made a little bit of a gain. Not much, you know, only 5 cents. So I think I'm with Matt. Looking at the export numbers, looking at the lack of quality, a lot of northern New South Wales has unloaded and will not have those quality trade articles. We might just see, you know, not a big jump, but we might just see that cattle market just move a bit in the south, I think, in the right direction.
You agree with that, Matt?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Matthew Dalgleish, keep up with Matthew's forensic examination of the markets on the Episode 3 website. And Chris Howie, sale yard legend, now boss of the RMA network representing independent agents from across Australia. Man, again, thank you for being on the grill for Beef Central.
Cheers, Kerry. Thanks, Kerry.
Thank you, Ben. And thank you for joining us. Until next time, I'm Kerry Lonigan. This has been the Weekly Grill brought to you by Elders and Rhinogard by Zoetis.